We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHBR. Thanks to former Chiefs wide receiver Mark Boerichter, who spent the last hour with us in studio. Right now, we are going to talk college football with Coach Gary Barnett, and we'll discuss the national championship game that took place last night. You heard it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. As the Georgia Bulldogs win their first national championship since 1980, as they defeat Alabama 33-18. Coach, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, doing well, Stephen. That was a heck of a game last night.
It was. It was a defensive struggle, 9-6 in the first half. But boy, it really turned up a couple of notches in the fourth quarter. It looked for a while like maybe Alabama was going to be able to spoil Georgia's season again after Stetson Bennett had that fumble and Alabama scored. But, boy, I loved hearing Stetson Bennett after the game talk about how he said I wasn't going to be the reason we lost. I had to come back and you know, somebody asked him, you know, how did you do it? How did you refocus? I had to. We were going to lose. I wasn't going to be the reason we lost. And anyone that knows his story about being a lifelong Georgia fan, being a preferred walk-on, and then having to transfer out and go to JUCO and then come back and battle all these 4- and 5-star guys to ultimately be the quarterback to lead them to their first championship in 4 decades, that's an incredible story, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, Stephen. And, those two passes he threw for touchdowns, I mean, those were dimes. I mean, they were unbelievably thrown and well-defended and, great catches. There were so many really unbelievable plays by unbelievable players in that game last night. And, what I saw unfold pretty much was a heavyweight fight. They just slugged it out for three quarters. And finally, like in any heavyweight fight, eventually all those blows matter. It's an accumulation of all the shots. And you look at how many times both those quarterbacks got hit after the ball was thrown. I mean, they were all under duress the entire game. Both teams just blitzed their fannies off and just decided the way to win was to pressure. And I don't think I've ever seen a game where there was so much pressure every single play as there was in that game last night. And how many times somebody has kept track of how many times each one of those quarterbacks got hit and got hit in the head and got hit everywhere. And, Alabama ended up losing its best player. And in the end, it showed. But a heavyweight fight, all those blows accumulated over 14 rounds, and it finally cracked in the last quarter. But, gosh, I've never seen so much speed on the field. So many kids, so many young people playing hard. And, those were two teams who flat out brought everything, every snap, and I thought there were some great play calls. I thought both coaches had good game plans on both sides of the ball, and it just played out, and one team won and one team didn't, and the team that everybody wanted to win sort of won, but it was just because, they didn't get anybody hurt, and Alabama did, and it often comes down to just that. I mean, losing Michi in the championship game and then losing Williamson last night, that was their two go-to guys, and they just didn't have any. So they, you look at the number of receivers that have gone through that program in the last couple of years, unbelievable. But that's the way I saw it. How about you?
But like you're describing all these unbelievable athletes everywhere. I mean, just chock full of future NFL stars all over the field. And you got this kid at quarterback, 5'11", when he came out of high school, 5'11", 185, and his only FBS scholarship offer came from Middle Tennessee State because coaches thought he was too short and too light. And then he's a walk-on, and he's the he's leading the scout team at Georgia, leaves and goes to Jones County, where he starts for a season, and then he's going to come back and go to Louisiana. But then after Justin Fields transfers to Ohio State, Georgia needs a backup. And so he goes back to Georgia, and you know far better than us how difficult a path it is for a walk-on, not only to make the team, but then to have to carve out a big role. And then here we are after all that that happened with him. He's the offensive MVP for the national championship game, and on a field where we're going to see stars come out of this game for years to come. After that fumble that he had, he was able, like you said, to deliver those two passes and play a hell of a fourth quarter and be one of the big reasons why they won the game. Can you just tell me, having dealt with so many walk-ons in your career as a coach, what a special journey that was, and how, look, coaches could use that as an example for walk-ons, because that it seems like if you watch that in the movie, you wouldn't believe it because of how unique his story is.
Well, it happens more than you think, and it's why you need walk-ons, and it's why apples don't ripen at the same time, and sometimes you just need a guy that is the right missing piece that you have, and you could see how much respect those players had for Stetson Bennett. Every one of them. Every single one of them were delivering huge hugs to that kid afterwards. And all the way up and down the line, everybody but JT Daniels, he didn't look like he was fired up about it. But, he'd won the respect. And walk-ons do that. They come out and they go through all that. And even though he came back, he was on scholarship. He was just a backup, mop-up guy that was an emergency quarterback. We had a kid like that at Colorado that I recruited just to be our third-string quarterback, because if we lost the other two, we were in trouble. And, we lost the other two, and he ends up winning the division in our side of it and playing in the championship game, beating Nebraska. And he was a third-string guy that had gone to junior college, and his name was Robert Hodges, and he was just the guy, but the guys loved him, and when he stepped in, he played. He was about the same size as Stetson Bennett, pretty much the same story. And guys love those guys. They just love their dedication that they have to the team and how much they work all the time.
So, I was looking at people on Twitter, and I know that's not some accurate barometer of where to judge things, but former college football players that are analysts and things like that saying, he's got to make a change at quarterback after that controversial, fumble, they called it, that led to Alabama's go-ahead touchdown. And we saw Alabama switch quarterbacks in the national championship game against Georgia right. A couple years ago. Did you think there was any way that that would happen at all? And I guess, were you surprised at all at the way he was able to rebound after that to lead the go-ahead touchdown?
Yeah, I guess I was really proud of the way he rebounded, because when you watch those games, you watch them like they're your guys.
Yeah.
And, that play could have gone either way, I thought. But, I was a little bit surprised they stayed with him. But it just shows you how much respect they had for him, the coaches, and for the coaches to stay with him in that situation. It's pretty remarkable, I think, like you mentioned. And I think as other people watch and observe, they would see it that way. But he had to have something within that team that those coaches knew and the players knew, and that he was their guy, whether he's a Georgia guy and that's why or what. But he had obviously won that team over and won those coaches over, and they were not about to not let him have his chance to win this thing.
I'm curious now what you think of Kirby Smart and the job he's done at Georgia after being an assistant under Nick Saban for so long. And it was interesting. They asked him last night after the game about the overtime loss a couple of years ago in the national championship game. And he said, does it make up for that? He goes, no, I still think about that. He goes, but I'm just going to think about this one a lot more than that one.
Yeah.
But you know, there was no guarantee he was ever going to get another crack at that, especially against Alabama, and win it, and he did, and especially after getting spanked in the SEC title game, a lot of people thought we were just going to see a replay from Alabama again. But you know, what does that say about what he's built in Georgia now that he's taken them to the peak of college football success with their first championship in over 40 years?
Well, I think it says a lot about what's in the DNA of coaches and competitors. And, you know, he's done a great job there. And I found it fun to watch the relationship between he and Nick and how much time they spent together and what a good relationship they had. And then to see him talk after the game, I thought that was pretty cool. It was so respectful and so loving between those two guys. You can tell there's just a great relationship there. But Kirby's in one of those places that has, you know, every year they have great players in Georgia and they get great players and they just haven't quite been able to get over the hump. And even the best player on the Alabama team is from Georgia. And so Will Anderson is from Georgia. So, I mean, there's so many players down there and they have them and they've been missing a piece every year. And they just sort of found it this year. They had a great team, great defense, and so I think Kirby's done a good job. And I think that he's going to always have a chance at Nick from now on because this is just going to make their recruiting at Georgia that much better.
We talked about the injury to maybe the best player, you know, most explosive player on the Alabama side, Jameson Williams, and. It was terrible to watch it happen. I saw a former NFL player this morning saying that this could have an effect when it comes to the opt-outs now. Like, we haven't really seen it in college football playoff games. It's only been in all the other bowl games, and this could lead to that. I'm not saying I hope that happens, but I saw somebody say that, so I thought I'd ask you, do you think that will have any effect? Will any player start deciding to opt out even when it comes to the playoff?
Well, all that works because you choose to listen to someone who puts that stuff in your ear. And, you know, right or wrong, there's someone, an agent, family member, somebody plants that. I think it's much less likely in the playoffs, a national championship game, to see it opt out. Usually, 99 times out of 100, means more to those players to win a national championship than anything at that point in time in their life, and they're most likely to think that way. I think you'll see it happen. There's no question about it, but it's more unlikely when you get to playoff level football.
Gary Barnett is our guest. I'm curious too, like say for a team like Missouri, when they first got to the SEC, I mean, obviously the top of the division was somewhat vulnerable, and that allowed Mizzou to win the division, you know, back to back seasons, and now, I mean, Georgia, that's the big kid on the block, not only in the division, but I mean nationwide and. I mean, the national champs. How much more difficult does that, or does that really change the dynamics much at all for what Missouri's trying to do? Because at least, you know, back then you saw they could win the division. They could get to the SEC title game. And I'm not saying they can't now and maybe have one of those years where they, you know, pop up and Georgia has a down year, but the task seems a lot more daunting now for Eli Drinkwitz.
Yeah, but you can't look at the top of the mountain. You've got to look at every step you're taking on the way up, and that's what you got to concentrate on. I mean, if all you did was look at the top, you'd never make it. You'd fall. You wouldn't be looking and concentrating on the little things that are going to let you get to the top of the mountain. So it makes it a little more of a climb maybe, but it's still going to take the same attention to detail, the same recruiting, the same attention to each step that you take in your program in order to get there. And those people didn't just land at the top. You know, they earned it getting there. And so that's what Missouri's got to do. It got more daunting the minute they signed the NIL thing into legal, making it legal. It got more daunting the minute they gave you a transfer portal. All that made it even tougher and a higher climb. But you got to pay attention to every step and not worry about not keep looking at the top, that you'll never get there.
Did you know that Greenlight Dispensary was voted the number one dispensary in Missouri and the number one loyalty program in Missouri? It doesn't surprise me one bit. If you're looking for the best cannabis experience in Kansas City, go to Greenlight Dispensary and visit them online at greenlightdispensary.com.
Gary Barnett's our guest. Right, speaking of Missouri, I wanted to ask you about Gary Pinkel being elected to the College Football Hall of Fame. And I saw Power Mizzou tweet this out yesterday. Since 1971, I think that was your last year as a GA at Mizzou, right, in 1971?
Yes.
Since 1971, Gary Pinkel, 118-73 at Mizzou. Anyone else, 180-216. And we saw the lack of success. I mean, Larry Smith had a little bit of success and got a bowl win before Gary Pinkel, but for a long time, you know, when I was a kid growing up in the 70s and into the 80s, I mean, there was bowl games were few and far between. I mean, Gary Pinkel comes in and never won the conference, but made it to, you know, four conference championship games, two in the Big 12, two in the SEC, twice was a win away from playing for the national championship. And you think about all the great players that came through the program. And what he did, and just talking about what I just did a minute ago, making it to a couple of SEC championship games, having Mizzou at number one after they beat Kansas in that great showdown at Arrowhead Stadium. I'm just curious what your reaction is as someone who played at Mizzou and coached for Mizzou in a while and still loves Mizzou to Gary Pinkel being recognized for everything he did, because he did create a generation of Mizzou football fans like my sons, my boys. There was a time, I know Gabe Yarn was saying there's a time that Missouri was looked at as a basketball school, and then after Gary Pinkel left, it kind of turned back into a football school. And I'm just curious what you have to say about him being elected to the Hall of Fame and the job that he did during his time at Mizzou.
Well, people have a clouded view of Missouri history. And once you look at the details and you look at the fact that Gary Pinkel took him to the almost to the pinnacle, as the highest they've been since 1969, and you know, he did it year after year after year after year. It's so hard to do that it's not an easy place to do it, and he took them from irrelevance to relevance. And I love Gary Pinkel, and we've always had a really good relationship, and I'm so happy for him going in the Hall of Fame, and he certainly deserves it. And you know, he did something that nobody else has done there, and it's being recognized nationally, the job he did. And you know, those of us who've probably played there look at it and go, you know, he's the only guy that's really put us on the map since 1969. And you know, we've had some good coaches go through and great people, but he's the one that's done it.
And you said that, you know, people don't realize how difficult it is to do that in Missouri. Why is it so difficult?
There's no inherited benefit advantages at the University of Missouri. You're not in the center of a great recruiting area. You're in a good, you know, an average recruiting area. You're not in the middle of all of it. You know, you've got a good school, you got all that, but there are places that have other advantages and money and those sorts of things, and so it's thrived as an average program for the most part through all those years, and Gary took what he had and made it into something that nobody else could do, and it's just one of those things. There's no level playing field in college football. It's not like the NFL. There is not a level playing field, and there never will be. And so you have some disadvantages going in, and you can't worry about them. You've got to build the other aspects of it, and that's what Gary did. And, you know, he made recruiting. He changed recruiting. He went somewhere else to get players. He did what he had to do in order to get where he got it.
And, Coach, you mentioned there with NIL and transfer portal, because there has been a debate, because some people suggest, well, this will help teams. Let's just say, like, Missouri, Kansas State, Kansas, the teams that we cover and talk about, will it help them compete with the powers that be, or will it make the powers even stronger and make the task of the coaches of those schools like that even tougher? And you said that it's going to make it's even tougher now.
Well, it's probably too early to make a true judgment on the effects of all this, and so what I say to you is keeping that in mind, but from my point of view, it looks like the guys at the top are going to get better. For example, Jameis Williamson goes from Ohio State to, where's he go, Alabama. The kid from Tennessee, the leading linebacker in the team, goes from Tennessee to Alabama. The best players, the very best players, will transfer to the very best programs. And I think the ones at the top are going to benefit. The guys at the bottom are going to get grad transfers. They're going to get people who just want to play one more year and their experience, and they're probably a better player than what some of the very lowest levels have. And then everybody in between is just trading guys who didn't want to be where they were and want to try something different. And so the risk continues. Now you're getting a guy who understands what it means to go to school. He understands what it means to be away from home. But they're all leaving because there was a problem somewhere, and there was something that they were unhappy with. So what makes you think that they're just going to eliminate that unhappiness or that problem by coming into your program? I just think it's a little too early to judge, but that's what it looks like to me.
Coach, it's been great talking college football with you all season long. I'm sure that if you're available, we'd love to check in with you around the NFL draft. But as always, thank you so much for all your time and all your discussion. We've loved it, and hopefully we can have you back again for another season, which I'm sure will be here before we know it.
Well, it's been great, guys. We had a great year, you know, and you guys, you got to call me back because I need my Nate and Steven and Jake fix, you know, every once in a while. And so let's stay in touch, and it was a great year. I love being on with you guys. I look so forward to talking with you every week.
Well, Jake needs a few things because he took Alabama and 3 points last night.
So your check might be a little short this year.
He needs some mentoring.
He could use
some help after that.
Just like Coach Saban said about his star players, we're not going to let Jake have one loss define him.
Right.
You know?
Well, I don't know. I think that loss is defining him pretty strongly today.
But not just one.
We'll try to move on from that.
I hate to go out this way, Jake, but man, that was a bonehead move.
Oh, you know, I got the playoffs coming up, Coach.
Yeah. Oh, you do. That's right. Well, I don't know anything about those things.
Yeah. Well, we got the Chiefs and the Steelers on Sunday night. So hopefully, it'll be the first step back to the Super Bowl for the Chiefs. So we're all fired up for that. But Coach, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again very soon.
Great being with you guys. Thanks.
That's Gary Barnett. Love talking to Gary Barnett.
Hey, you're talking about Gary Pinkel and your Missouri coaches there. Albert Breer just tweeted out that Colts defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus will interview for the Jaguars job on Saturday.
Matt Eberflus, former defensive coordinator for the Missouri Tigers.
Anytime I hear Matt Eberflus' name, I hear it in Gary Pinkel's voice.
Right, Eberflus.
Because you know it's Matt Eberflus. Gary Pinkel put together a really good staff, didn't he? I mean, that's a huge part of being a great head coach at the college level. And he stuck by his guys.
He put together a staff, basically, that was his guys from Toledo, kept Andy Hill, which was hugely important at the time. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, who out-recruited Andy Hill in Kansas City?
Nobody.
Not even Charlie Weiss when he tried to. Not even Charlie Weiss with his energy and his efforts. But... Oh, no, absolutely, because there were times, you remember that early on, that there was pressure for him to make moves and to move on. We have a system. We believe in it. It came from Don James of Washington. We trust it. And what have we said? Sometimes football coaches are stubborn to a fault. He was stubborn, and it saw him through some tough early times at Mizzou. And who knows,
And he had loyalty from his coaches because he was loyal to them.
And Mike Alden, and loyalty from Mike Alden. because and that was his guy. That and I was there. I covered Gary Pinkel's introductory press conference. I was talking about this with the boys the other day. I mean, that's now I've been here so effing long at Union Broadcasting. Like, I was there and handed him the headset to go on the afternoon show live in Columbia as he was introduced. And I'll never forget, Mike Alden called him a recruiting machine. And I was sitting there with Corby Jones going on with Kevin and Todd talking about this new coach, Gary Pinkel from, you know, Toledo, and he beat Penn State last year, and, you know, they all fired up. And then I was there at the Dome in St. Louis for Brad Smith's debut, right? I was there Pinkel's first game at Mizzou. I was there with Whitlock, right? And I've told you guys a story. They played Bowling Green, mm-hmm. and they lost to Bowling Green. And who was the head coach of Bowling Green?
Urban Meyer.
And they go, this Notre Dame assistant took over Bowling Green. Look, he's already just beat Gary Pinkel. People are pissed off and angry. But all that stuff. I mean, but my point is, from the beginning, to be able to see that and cover it, be there on the field when they beat Nebraska, and to give me one of the best moments ever as a dad on a road trip going to the SEC title, you know, all those great things. It was, you think about all the moments and how, the best way I could put it, he made Saturdays important for Mizzou football fans. Because for a long time when I was a kid, they were not important whatsoever. And that's what all you can ask. He made Saturdays important. There was a must-watch on your calendar. And I don't want to speak for you, but that's, you know, to generalize it, that's what you want Lance Leipold to do, right? To make Saturdays important again.
Yes.
To where you circle it, like, oh, you know, build your schedule around it. Well, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. Kansas plays at, you know, 2:30.
Yep.
Honey, we're not going to that deal. Right? Because, like, and Jake, when Mangino was the coach and they were winning, that was appointment Saturday. That was
you looked
Saturday's
forward
important.
To the game. Yeah, you actually cared. You looked forward to the game.
And for over a decade, that Mizzou football Saturdays, everything was fantastic. He gave the fan base that, and that's when people criticize him. I want to flip him with a rubber band just like that. Look.
Flip him.
Right.
I remember doing
Come here, Nate.
You know what I remember? Bam. And this isn't just Missouri fans. This is fans at any school. You get spoiled, and you start to take whatever baseline your coach has set. You take that as, oh, well, we should achieve at that level every year. When Blaine Gabbert was the quarterback, and Missouri lost a bowl game. Was it to Iowa or somebody like that? And you were on vacation. You were on vacation, and I was hosting a show the next day. And
that was Gabbert.
We actually, what did I say? I might have taken some calls in here or something, but we had a few Missouri fans like, I'm done with this Gary Pinkel thing. This just, you know, he's run his course.
He made me call in the show, and I was pissed off. Why'd you leave me alone?
He's run his course. Like, he's, you know, and I'm like, are you serious? I mean, you know, where would this program be without Gary Pinkel? This guy is, you know, he's like the winningest coach in the history of your school. That's just the way all fans are that way. I mean, you know, they get spoiled.
Out of breath because we've been chasing Gary Pinkel for the past couple of days. So hopefully we're going to have him on the show tomorrow, if not
that'd be awesome.
Very soon. I don't want to chase anyone anymore because, you know, I'm tired now. I make Jake chase people. He could run for days. You know he's got some bad wheels. He can still run for days.
Feeling good.
That's exactly right. We'll be back after this on WHB.